Mr. Pullen, reel 21.
I suppose when you were at sea, you'd make friends with particular blokes. You'd have a particular mate.
No. No, I don't think so. You would go down to your mess, perhaps, talk, perhaps several of your messmates would be there, see. Sit down and talk to them, or if it was calm enough, you could sit down and write a few letters, see. A bit clearer, you know, you could sit there and amuse yourself that way or the other.
What were wingers?
Well, that was supposed to be the old sailors having a young sailor, you know, to do his bit of washing or do a bit of something like that, you know, see. It was nothing much, as you might say. You can't call it much of a case with them, look, see. But it was like they would take the certain ones, look, see. And I know I was always trouble about things like that.
What sort of trouble?
Well, in one ship I was in, a mess there, they had one or two of them there, look, see. And I remember a fellow named Chapman. And this Chapman was a bit of a cockney swinger, like. And we got our mess tools up on a Sunday for church. And I had to get mine up because my cooking chum was in the Admiral's barge. He couldn't be inboard. The following Sunday, it was Chapman's job. So his mate was away. And I was reading a book up on the upper deck on the Sunday when he came up to me and he said, "I suppose you're too good to help." So I said, "Nobody helped me last Sunday." I said, "I'm not helping them." So, of course, it led up to a fight. But he had the worst of it, really, because when he went down in the mess, his man that he knew, he said, "You met your Waterloo then, eh?" See? So that was a bit of trouble you had with some of them. And there was, if you didn't mingle with these older people, they would always be telling you that, "Oh, you couldn't do this, you couldn't learn that." They'd be teaching these all. Now, when they had their wingers like that, I'd lift my lid of my ditty box up, and I used to have a bit of a notepaper, and I used to put down all different things they'd be telling us, see? So that when the time came, I went up and I said to the bosun, "I think I can pass for an able seaman, sir." "Well," he said, "if you think you can, put in a request." I put a request in. So about three of them in my mess, here they said, "Oh, Timoth, put in the pass for an able seaman. He ain't got the brains of a duck, see?" That's how they measure me up, see? So a chap named Lofty Soph had been a petty officer, but he'd been derated because he was out boat sailing one day and the midshipman was in charge, and he told the midshipman he was doing wrong. The midshipman wouldn't listen, picked him up and dipped him in the pond, see? He lost all what he had through that. So he's an able seaman in the mess. And I know he's there, and he was a smart-looking man, like, you know. And he was saying to him, "You know, Tim has put in the path for able seaman." He said, "He ain't going to pay a seaman." "Oh," I said, "suppose he passes and you fail, you big apes." You know? So I passed and they failed. That's how it happened.
Was there, in the mess decks with these wingers and things, was there much homosexuality aboard ship?
Well, I didn't see any, but if there was, it was ashore. Sometimes they go ashore boozing, you know, see. I've known them go, older ones and younger ones go ashore boozing, but of course, what happened between that, I didn't know, you see. But they're not on board ship.
So you didn't come across any?
No, the last case I heard about sexuality was they sent a crowd of boys aboard the Glasgow after the war, you know. Not after the war. Well, the war was on, but to replenish what have we already lost? And the cellmaker was caught going around their hammock at night. He lost all he had, that man, and he went to prison. Yeah, he didn't do no wrong, but found there with them boys. Mm. And that was he was a clever chap, too. He used to make one or two suits of clothes for me and that. Good at sewing, you know, and a sewing machine, all that he had. Mm.
Did you get any lectures or any talks from the officers or the chaplain or the medical officer or anyone about mixing with older men and homosexuality and things like that?
No, they would never allow nothing like that, see? And they would never say much about it. But it was if it was ever known, they would, straight away jump down on it. But we had lectures over, men over 21 would lecture on syphilis and gonorrhea, mm. that, see? And I think I've told you about the gonorrhea, man.
Yes.
I was telling my doctor, he don't know anything at all about syphilis, you know? He said that was before my time.
Now, when war broke out in August 1914, you were in Rio, on the Glasgow. Can you remember how the news of the war came to you?
Yes. It said, keep what I would call war is imminent. That was how the news came through to us. We didn't think so at the time. We only heard about the Serbian fellow being murdered, you know, see? But that didn't strike us that there was going to be war.
Yeah.
So then, of course, everything got in a bit of a turmoil. The ship had to be get ready, you know, straight away.
What sort of turmoil did things get into?
Well, throwing wood overboard, all the wood, you know, get rid of timber of every description so there wouldn't be a fire on board in battle. And then we had to go on chipping the paintwork where it was pretty thick on the turrets and different parts of the ship. Because, you know, when a projectile strikes, it catches fire. The force of the projectile is in the steel. And, of course, then off we went, left Rio, and put to sea, find out what there was doing. They say we bumped up against the first Yankee ship.
What happened then?
And then, of course, we fired across her bows, tell her to stop. She yelled out, we're Yanks, we're not Americans, we're not English. See? However, we let her go, and then carried on again. And then near Santa Catarina, we picked up another ship come across from Cape Town, German ship for the sewing machines. So we put a crew on board, took charge of her, and I don't know what became of her afterwards. I suppose she was sold out the way, see.
When you left Rio, had you had time to provision?
No, no, we couldn't get no provisions then, you see. The provisions we had was on board already, you see. But we were short lots of times. They say we had to stop several ships, demand food from them, you see. Either meat or potatoes and stuff like that, you see. And sometimes they give us fruit, and very good, the passengers were.
What sort of ships would you stop?
Merchant, perhaps tourist ships, some, and some are merchant ships ploughing the seas, you know, an ordinary life.
All British ships?
All British, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We picked up with one called the Pax.
P-A-X?
P-A-X, and we thought she had something on board. She was loaded with linseed grain, linseed. We got all that linseed out, thinking she had some ammunition there. Couldn't find nothing, so she was all right. Let her go, look, see?
What nationality ship was she?
No, not a very big ship.
What nationality?
Oh, what was she now? I don't know.
So after you left Rio, you went to your war stations, did
yes,
you?
Yes, oh yes.
Where was that?
Well, cruise right through now on to down to South America way, and we was dashing about all over the shop then, from one place to another. We had news that a certain ship was in, the ships we were after, the German cruisers, where they were in a certain place. We'd rush there, but then nothing happened. And during the time in the with the good hope in Monmouth.
But tell me how you met up with the rest of the fleet and what ships it consisted
of. On a Sunday afternoon, it was about 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, November 1st, we'd come out of Coronel, and we had a message for the Admiralty. Well, the weather was very bad, so finally we picked up with the Admiral, that was in the Good Hope in the Monmouth, and the Otranto. The Otranto was an armed liner, but she didn't take part in the war, in the battle. Oh, the Craddock sent her away before the battle took place. However, we couldn't get the message to him only by putting it in a barrel and paying it out on a rope till it reached the ship. They fished it inboard and got the message out from the barrel, see? And according to what a signalman told me, we'd been into Coronel and sent a cable to the Admiralty in London to say that, that the German fleet had come from China and was now stationed at Robinson Crusoe Island. And the British Admiralty sent out a message to say, of course it was in cipher, you know, you got sufficient steel to cope with hostilities, you get on with it. However, Craddock now, coming out of Coronel, see, and meeting us, he sent a signal now to raise, open up for 5 miles apart and steam for 15 knots. And after we been steaming from in the morning till the afternoon, because all we had was a potato and canned beef, you know, free bentos. That was our dinner. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we sighted the German fleet. That was the Scharnhorst, Nuremberg, Leipzig, Dresden, and Nuremberg. Two big battle cruisers and three light cruisers. And he had three colliers there, one with his clothes, one with food, and one with the coal, following him, see? However, we didn't see them three ships, they kept away, like. And we cruised with them now till 7 o'clock exactly that night, when a broadside from them opened fire, exactly 7 o'clock, because one lieutenant said to me, quick, pull in, take the time. That's exactly 7 o'clock it was, see? And in 5 and 20 minutes, the Good Hope drifted on our port side, all in flames, and a few minutes after, she exploded and both funnels went, two went one way and two went the other. Her magazines must have blown up, see? And then we came round the stern of the Monmouth and the Marines in the turret there cheered us. And just as they cheered us, three shells from the German battle cruisers hit us right in the port quarter. I already showed a picture in the front room. And that now gave us a bit of a shaking up. Our ship toppled about a bit, and orders came from the Monmouth, I'm making water badly forward. Because our captain said, can you steer a certain course? However, as soon as we were hit like that, the ship went one side and then another before she righted herself. And then the commander come running out to me, a quick pull in, and we went down aft. That's where she'd been hitched, you know, see? We took the bolts off the doors and got in and got two parrots there, see? And they were squealing with the smoke from them. However, I flung the parrots out because the water was now about that high, see? And I had a capstan bar to push to keep that deck, this deck from, you know, as the ship would go down, a part of that deck that had been blown away would rise, see? I got a capstan bar to put up there. But that was no use. In comes this carpenter named Chippy England. not that way, Ted. He said, like this. He had a plank there about 10 foot long and about 18 inches wide, about 2 inches thick. Had us stand on that plank and put the capstan bar on that, hold the top other deck up, see? There's that. And that wasn't doing, you know, when you're up to your waist in water. And we've done all we could to fill that hole up. Bags and hammocks and dilly boxes, throwing everything in there, see? Because that was our, that's where we lived on half there. Our lavatories and all was half there, see? So that was the end of that. So now the Monmouth was being beat up badly. As we steamed aside, it was getting dark now, you see. And I run up at the searchlights, because the German searchlights was going there.